We made it. 150 weeks, 150 amazing guests. Episode 150. Huge thank you to Carrie Ann Jukes, my partner in crime behind the scenes, and Finlay Hill on the edits. And most importantly, to you guys for sticking with us and tuning in. Without further ado, welcome to episode 150. I'm Richard Hill, the host of Ecommerce One. In this episode, I speak with Jacques Vanderwilt. Now, if you've been in e-commerce for a little while, you will have heard of a SaaS called Data Feed Watch, and Jacques is the original CEO and founder. Some say he's the grandmaster of product feeds. Data Feed Watch was acquired back in 2022, but Jacques continues to fly the flag as general manager. Naturally, in this episode, we talk all things product feeds. How data feeds can improve the accuracy and efficiency of product listings in e-commerce. What three best practices that e-commerce companies can implement straight away to improve the performance of their Google Shopping ads. Jacques talks about specific projects he's worked on and the impact that feeds had on performance and what's next in the world of data feeds over the next 12 months. And of course, so much more in this one. So if you enjoyed this episode, hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening to this podcast. You're always the first to know when a new episode is released. Now, let's head over to this fantastic episode. How are you doing?
Great. Nice to see you, Richard. Thanks for having me today.
No problem at all. I'm excited for this one. Jacques represents Data Feed Watch, and I've got an absolutely fantastic story. And this is a bit of software and tech that we've been using in our business now for, I think, about 7 years. So I absolutely can't wait to dive in. But I think before we do that, it'd be great for you to introduce yourself to the listeners and how you got into the world of e-commerce and data feeds.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot, Richard. So I was running a company like 12 years ago that was doing automated bid management for Google ads. At the time, those were only text ads, right? So we invented this software that would increase your bid or lower your bid on whatever keyword, depending on the CTR or, you know, whatever other metric. And then we'd shoot that straight back into the Google API. And we were obviously on a course to be billionaires in 3 years. Usually, you know, reality catches up, and it did. So it was a good service, but large companies were not interested and small companies were just too small. And right about that time, Google launched something new and they called it product listing ads. And it was really something else because it would be like, you know, the title of a product and then an image of the product and the price. And you had to upload a feed to the Google Merchant Center. And so we figured, you know, let's add managing these campaigns to our service as well, you know, which of course we didn't because that takes a year to develop at least. We just said we would, right? And then we started figuring out how that worked. So fairly quickly, we found out that managing these campaigns was not too difficult. However, the inability to control the data feed going into that new Google Merchant Center thing, that was a real problem. And you know, we spent countless hours talking to customers, explaining that you really need to include the price in the data feed, or there's just nothing we can do, right? And he would have to take it back to his web developer because he just wouldn't get it. And the web developer would take a month and charge him $500. It was a nightmare. So quickly, we figured out two things. You know, this is not going to work. We're going to drive ourselves totally crazy if we continue working like this. And the other thing is, there's got to be a business here. And we started looking around. And there wasn't much else. I mean, there were a few. But they were not very user-friendly, and they were very expensive. They'd been around for a few years. They were servicing the highest end of the market, the big brands. But for the average retailer, there was not much. So we just created a little piece of software in a few months that could do a rename and add a fixed value and something else. And we're like, whoa, this solves like 90% of all of our problems. And then we decided to do, you know, the proverbial pivot. We quit working on the bid management software and we went all out in feed management, the data feed optimization. And we launched a better version of what I just said in Q2 2013. So as a matter of fact, Data Feed Watch is 10 years old right now.
Yeah.
And we never regretted making the move. I started other businesses. All businesses were good ideas. The timing was not necessarily perfect every time, but this was.
Yeah.
Google took the entire concept of data feeds to a much higher professional level. Mm-hmm. And it became clear to everyone, you know, within 2 years that without the ability to manage and optimize your data feed, you wouldn't stand a chance as an advertiser.
Yeah.
And so we've been growing ever since.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I know the company reasonably well because we've been using your software and tech for, I think, 7-ish years. And it's just been a great, you know, there's a lot of options out there in the market, a lot of new people coming through. But obviously, if you've got 10 years plus in the game, it's a long time, isn't it? A long, long time.
It is.
Talking about things that probably a lot of people, you know, going back to 10, 12, 13 years ago when, you know, I'm trying to think, obviously it's known as product listing ads. It's had various names over the years, hasn't it? But ultimately, I think it was called Frugal right back in the day.
Correct.
That was the original
listings
about 15 years ago. And basically you would list your SKU, your products and your SKUs, and it was completely free. Not like it can be free now where you're sort of on the back of page 46, sort of thing in the back end. Whereas back then you would list for free. And you would show on the first page of Google in effect for free, which sounds crazy, but it was absolutely true back in the day. Yeah.
It was probably the best way, you know, whether they did it consciously or not, the best way to test a new service to offer it for free and then see, you know, how it works, how people interact with that, if it's even a viable business, and then actually build the system behind it.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's say, you know, we benefited from the start of Google Shopping, and so did Google. Pretty much so.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in feeds right from then as well. So it's an interesting sort of, you know, the whole, like, how important it is now. You know, our listeners that are listening in, you know, I'm pretty sure that 9 out of 10 will have a feed, but, you know, probably the detail and the absolute sort of what you can actually do with those feeds, I would imagine that, you know, there's a lot of learning to be had, you know, and I think that's what we'll get stuck into. But before we talk about feeds, you know, I know you've had a really good, you know, great story in terms of, you know, a pivot from back in the day. And then we get a lot of people on the podcast. It's just, I love these stories where, you know, we're just going to try this thing, you know, and what might have been just a little idea at the back of your mind when there's a bigger business over here that's trying to figure something out. And then the pivot or the little side project becomes the major thing. You know, it's just great. I know recently you've been acquired as well over this last year or so, which is, you know, it's a great story. But what would you say has been your greatest and biggest learning point in your career?
Well, I gave that a little thinking to see if I could come up with something totally original and creative. But I can't, you know, hiring good people is key to your success. You know, timing matters, product development matters, product market fit, it's all important.
Yeah.
But to create something and then carry it forward, you know, with 10 years of continuous growth, that only works if you hire the right people. You know, there's obviously a big learning curve there as well. You know, when you're small, you know, I shoestring the company. I had like 3 or 4 developers and that was it. You know, I didn't pay myself any money for like 6 or 12 months.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're very frugal about wages, right? But when you grow, you know, over time, we've invested more and more in the people that we work with and you know, got more critical on the type of people that we hire.
Yeah.
And that is really the one thing that will drive your growth more than anything else.
So the hiring of great people, have you got any tips on hiring them specifically? So, you know, I think, you know, we're in a hiring process right now. I think we've got 7 roles in our agency that are live, or some are live, some are sort of secret. But I, you know, I absolutely agree. You know, when I think about the some of the hires we've made in the last few years, you know, some of them have been absolutely key to our.
Hi there. I just wanted to take a quick break to introduce our sponsor, PriceInc. PriceInc is a competitor price tracking and monitoring software that can dynamically change your product's prices on all sales channels. They work with brands such as Samsung, Sony, and Suzuki to increase their online revenue. If you run Google Shopping, which I know a lot of you guys do, this software is absolutely key to accelerating profit. One of the reasons I recommend PriceInc to my clients is because you can find out your competitors' pricing and stock availability in one simple-to-understand dashboard, giving you a huge competitive advantage. If you have any questions about this software or you are ready to get started with a free 14-day trial, head to econ1.com/contact and complete the inquiry form and we will connect our listeners to the PriceInc team. Right, let's head straight back to this fantastic episode.
Semi-success that we're having at the moment, but any specific sort of actionable things when it comes to sort of spotting people, hiring people, training people, retaining people?
What we changed a couple of years ago, quite a few years ago, is that I read this book. I forgot the author, but the A player method or whatever.
Yeah,
it described a completely different way of hiring people. So I'm not so much focused on, you know, you sit down with somebody, you know, and it's a nice fellow or it's a nice girl, and you know they have the right resume, and you talk about it, and that's it. Because that's like the feel good method of hiring people, you know, and also it assumes that your antenna for understanding what people are about in a 1 hour interview is actually awesome. And for most people, it is not, or at least it's not 100%.
Yeah.
So instead, we started using this method where we define upfront what are the objectives of the, you know, the person that we'll hire, we need to achieve, and what is the skill set, and focus on that. And then, you know, it's still important you have a click with the person, but it's, you know, it's even more important to tie that person to the very tasks and objective that he or she will execute. We invested way more time. You know, we're doing like 3 or 4 rounds before we hire someone. First a short one, then like a round that's going to take several hours, interview by several people. So it is way more thorough.
Yeah.
And if there's a red flag, whatever form, it means we're not hiring.
Yeah.
And that thoroughness, I think, has really improved the quality of the people that we're hiring.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So that thoroughness, that process of and hiring people for a specific role that's defined and matching that so that their skills with that role. Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I think I totally resonate. You know, I think we're in our 13th year as a business, and you know the fun and games of hiring over the years. You know, we've had a lot of success, but of course we've learned a lot and had a few scars along the way as well with, you know, from the process. But yeah, I would completely sort of concur on that one. So data feed watch then. So I think, you know, there's a lot of options out there in the market with feeds and tech. You know, what would you say data feed watch does that maybe others, or what are some of the standout features that data feed watch has?
Well, let me give you the basics. Every merchant, every online retailer that wants to advertise on Google, Facebook, PriceRunner, you know, whatever channel they want to advertise on, needs to send a file with all the product data, ID, price, product category, description, title, you know, image, whatever you, to that very channel. So to the Google Merchant Center or to the Facebook Business Manager or, you know, anything. And every channel has its own feed requirements, right? So Google says, thou shalt send me your product data, and the first field shall be called ID. Yeah. And it will contain the unique identifier of a product. And if you do not call it ID, we will disapprove your entire feed, and you will never advertise on Google Shopping.
Yeah.
And of course, young PriceRunner will say something else. Say, oh, young first field, call it SKU. You don't call it SKU, we're not advertising. So, man, you know, it will drive you nuts as a retailer, especially when you want to advertise on like 5 different channels. So we at DataFeedWatch will connect to your online store at least once a day. We will download all this product data and store it in DataFeedWatch, and then we'll enable you to create a feed for Google, for PriceRunner, for Criteo, for, you know, anywhere you want to advertise. And it's set up, you know, in a templated system that will basically make it impossible for you to go wrong. We've pre-printed the ID on Google and the SKU on PriceRunner and anything else. So we will, now once we have your data and you go to work, because it's, you know, it's a highly supported but do-it-yourself system, you go to work to create your feed for any channel. The first thing that you'll achieve through DataFeedWatch is that you will make the requirements, so your product will not be disapproved. While you're at it, we offer numerous possibilities. You know, I think we're going to talk about that a lot more in the next 20 minutes. Numerous possibilities to improve the quality of your feed. Your feed is the foundation of every successful advertising campaign.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, you know, we offer you analytical data on the performance of your individual products on individual channels that will enable you to do an even better job in terms of selling more and improving your ROI. Yeah. In the process, you know, implicitly, it means that while you sleep, Mr. Merchant, we will refresh all of your data feeds automatically every night so that the feeds contain the latest pricing that you changed, you know, just before you went to bed, and that out-of-stock products will not be advertised because we know about it and everything else. So it's a streamlining of the entire process, making sure everything's up to date. And while there is a big focus on convenience and error fixing and everything else, which is super important, I like to see data feed optimization as the biggest opportunity you have to sell more of your products and increase the ROI of your campaigns. It's about making more money.
Yeah, that's what we like to hear.
Exactly. That's the business that we're all in.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, a lot of merchants are very guilty. You know, we've seen, I don't even know, hundreds, if not 500 plus, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of feeds. And, you know, typically it goes like this, you know, we've tried shopping. It doesn't work is quite common. Or yep. We've got shopping running, but the ROAS or the TROAS is not, you know, it's not quite where we want it. Oh, let's have a look at the feed, you know, and the feed is typically, you know, it's been pulled, you know, almost like a one-click pull from Shopify, Magento, etc. Put into the merchant center, linked up to your AdWords account, and, you know, products are all over the joint. Everything's getting bid on the same, potentially. There's things missing here, left, right, and center. You know, and then, you know, it's like, almost like garbage in and then poor results out, you know. So that's quite common, you know, and that, you know, and I think, you know, that'll be probably half the people listening now go, yeah, that's what we do, you know. You know,
exactly. But you know, that is, you know, a considerable part of a clientele is search engine advertising, search and marketing companies like yours, like your SEO Traffic Lab. Yeah. And companies like you play a pivotal role in exactly this. Now, for the merchant, now he's juggling like 10 balls anyway.
Yeah.
And then marketing is one of them. And then to the extent that he even understands how to do his bidding on Google Shopping or anyone else, you know, understanding feeds, even though it's not difficult in its own right, you know, at some point it gets too much. And then they hire a company like you, you manage their campaigns, you get them results, and you clean up their feet. Yeah, you clean up their feeds.
Yeah.
In a way that, again, it's not complicated, but they never got to it. Yeah. And the value that you add there is crucial.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. That absolutely. It's usually a time thing, isn't it? You know, like most channels in marketing, you know, most of them can be successful, but you need to be, or you need an expert in those channels. And it's difficult as a business owner, a small business, to be have an expertise in everything, you know. And if you do, then something else usually gives in your business, doesn't it? So with the feeds, then, when you think about improving accuracy and efficiency of product listings, you know, what are some of the things, you know, why, you know, how can data feeds improve accuracy and efficiency?
Let me just come up with a few very, you know, simple examples, you know, instead of the list of 100 that I have in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
So fun fact, 7% of all products being uploaded to the Google Merchant Center are disapproved. So, you know, that's not mind-bogglingly high, but, you know, 7% of your total number of products, that's not good. And often it's like simple problems like the color or the size is missing. Yeah. You know, which is no reason for disapproval, but it is if you sell apparel. The price is listed, but not the sale price. Ooh, that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt because now you're advertising the wrong price. It will lead to disapproval. Yep. Or on other channels, it will not, will not lead on disapproval. You're just advertising a product for $12.50 instead of $9.99. And that's going to hurt your campaign nonetheless. So there are so many problems that need to be fixed
Yeah.
That, you know, that is just so easy to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
That goes to accuracy. And yeah, you know, in terms of efficiency, yeah, you know, I'll get into, let's say, more tactics later, but just the out of stock or availability issue alone. Mm-hmm. Imagine you are advertising a product that you do not have in stock. Well, yeah, that's an experience that, because we're also, every one of us is a consumer as well, right? So yeah, you go looking for something and then you find it, you click the ad, you go to the site, and then you're ready to buy. And they don't have your size. And you're like, oh man,
yeah,
you guys suck.
Totally. This...
I'm clicking your ad. I'm ready to buy. I have money.
Yeah.
So it's not just that you just lost, you know, 130 for a click, you know, as a merchant.
Yeah.
Lost
the customer
goodwill
yeah.
of the consumer. Yeah. And he's going to discard you next time he sees your ad. And that is, you know, just because you forgot to sync your quantities with Google, you know, through data
research. Yeah. You know, that happened to me last night. I was looking to buy I don't know if to say what it is actually, because it's a bit controversial, but a speed detector camera for my car.
Yeah, and you had to wait till night to buy it, right? Because otherwise other people would see it.
Well, I'm having a car upgrade at the moment, which means that my car might be a little bit faster than it should be. I thought I better get a speed detector. So I'm in a forum. I went to the forum and everyone said, buy this specific speed detector. So I went, and it's a very well-known brand, and everywhere is out of stock because there's a new model coming out. So that's why. And in a month's time, there's a new model coming out. But if you didn't know that, which I didn't to start with, so I searched for the model, you know, the product by name and brand. And then I find shopping ads, three shopping ads, every single one of them I go to, and they're out of stock because there is no stock. But why are you advertising something that is out of flipping stock? You know, so all those, I spent about an hour finding out that everywhere's out of stock and there is no stock, but so frustrating.
Yeah,
very, very frustrating, you know, and saw some terrible websites amongst them all as well, which made me think, oh, I'm not going to buy from those three firms as well.
However, do send them an email today in the morning to explain what they're doing wrong. Explain to them that you can solve that problem using Daily Fleet Watch by downloading the data every day and then creating a very simple rule in your Google Shopping feed.
Yeah.
If the quantity is less than one, you know, or put in a margin, if the quantity is less than four, then set the availability field in Google to out of stock. When you buy more stock and it goes up, it will automatically, without you doing anything, go back to in stock.
Yeah.
It's going to take you 20 seconds to fix that. And yet, you know, as we all experience, lots of merchants haven't figured it out. And that is like, I wouldn't know of any fruit hanging any lower than that. And that goes to accuracy, but also to efficiency.
Yeah. That's some great ones. I mean, how many people now will log in and see those, you know, those disapprovals? And usually they're quite easy to fix. Not always, but quite often, you know, if it's simply a color, you know, or a variable missing that you have, or a GTIN you've not put in, or whatever, you know, it's usually, you know, you go in, oh, we're missing these, you know. But then, you know, my understanding is there's something called a feed score. I don't know if that's still a thing, actually, you know, and if you've got a high level of disapprovals, then your feed score will automatically be, you know, quite low. So obviously something you should be checking, you know, rather than going in, logging in, setting it up and forgetting it, like any channel, you know, disapprovals and, you know, can mount up over time.
No, yeah. Totally. Now, if you, in Daily Fleet Watch, you create a feed, or, you know, if you change it and you save it, we will automatically send you to a feed review page, and it will show you the score. It will show you the error. So even before Google or another channel will pick up on that, you can see what you did wrong, where you're not making requirements, fix it.
Yeah,
exactly to your point.
So quite a few things there that are mistakes that you see there, you know, and things that people should work on, and quite straightforward, really. You know, obviously, if you're advertising stuff that you don't have, you know, it's just a complete, you know, waste of time, isn't it? You're paying for clicks you've not got, sorry, for stock you've not got. you know, and you're creating a bad experience, or a customer's never going to buy and they're never going to come back, that's for sure. So, you know, a couple of things there. But in terms of obviously the thousands or tens of thousands of feeds and customers you will have worked with and your company will have worked with over the years, you know, what would you say now to the listeners with about maybe three things that are sort of fairly quick things that you maybe see time and time again that you can go in and fix, you know, that will help performance? I know you've mentioned a few things there already, but is there things that are a bit more aggressive in terms of getting a return?
Well, I'll mention a few. You know, we are publishing an annual feed marketing report. You can download it somewhere on our site.
Yep.
And it contains, you know, an incredible number of statistics on, you know, products, channels, per industry, per country, and what have you. But obviously, you know, we also see, you know, we also see among the like 20,000 shops
yeah.
that are using DataFeed Watch, what are the methods that they are using? So fortunately, we see that they are primarily doing the stuff that we recommend. But anyway, so it's no longer my opinion. It is a fact most of the retailers are, for example, okay, you know, fixing your problems. You know, we already discussed that. It's the foundation. You know, start there. Don't even think about, oh, how am I going to get more ROI? Well, you know, by fixing you. So that's one, right?
Yeah.
But then, so the next one up that is more fancy is title improvement. So the title is the most optimized field in any Google shopping feed, you know, and basically in any other field. So let me give you my favorite example. Let's say that you're on the site of Levi's.com. You know, they sell jeans, and sometimes you go to a product page and the product is called 501. It totally makes sense. So if you do what you just said, right? You know, you use the, you know, whatever, the automatic Shopify app from the App Store, and they will just download it and generate a feed of that, then your ad will show an image in 501. That's not bad, but it's really not very good, because what you want the title to be is Levi's 501 men's blue jeans size 32, 36, whatever your size is that you sell. Right. So people actually search very specifically for the brand and the type.
Yeah.
For the size, the color. They know what they want. So they will enter a, let's say, long tail search query. Yeah. And then Google says, oh, this person is looking for a Levi's 501, blah, 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 blah. That's a search query. And, you know, out of the 50 ads that I could serve, I have like 7 that actually have that as their title. So that's probably a great match. So therefore, I will show, you know, 6 of those 7 ads. So you get more impressions as a retailer by having a rich title. Subsequently, the consumer says, hey, that title, you know, he doesn't say that, you know, he doesn't even think it, but in the back of his mind, he notices that is actually exactly what I was looking for. It's my brand, my size, my color. So I'll click that one. You get a bigger CTR. If you made it that far down the chain and you're, you know, on the product page, you're way more likely to actually buy it because it was exactly what you came for.
Yeah.
So an enriched title is a triple whammy: more impressions, higher CTR, and a higher conversion rate. It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah.
So we spent, I don't know, you know, months of time just talking about, advising, writing about improving titles. So it's not that difficult to improve your title. You can just, you know, think what the title should be.
Yeah.
You can also, you know, look at a blog and see what the best practices are per product. You know, if you sell a dress in general, like 11 months a year, we sell it around Christmas time. You know, there's still a different title, right? Because the dress for the title is a the title for the dress in December is a Christmas dress, whereas the other 11 months it's you know, you put the brand first. The highest level of title optimization is just to, we actually did a case study with one of our American customers, And they were selling sports apparel. They were selling baseball gloves, and they were doing well, right? They just had normal title for every baseball glove. It included the brand, a couple of other things. It included a baseball glove. And then somebody went into the search term report in Google, and he found out that people were actually searching for a lot of stuff that was not in the title, like, you know, was it for themselves or for the kid? Are they left-handed or right-handed? Do they want a leather one or a plastic one? No one ever realized that. So then they started enriching the titles of all of the baseball gloves to include these terms. Their traffic went up by 250% on the same budget. I know 250% sounds like, yeah, this got to be. No, this is the kind of impact that it has, because you're not no longer guessing what the title should be or what people are searching for. You know what it is. And then by enriching your titles, you are going to get the triple whammy.
Yep.
More impressions, higher CTR, higher conversion rate. So yeah, 250% more traffic in this case. I do believe that's the case. As a matter of fact, we measured it, so we know it's the case. But that is how crazy a simple optimization can be. Yep. There's work to be done to figure out what the terms are. So you get 50,000 products. Do not figure it out for 50,000 products. Okay. But why don't you start by identifying your 10 best-selling products? You know, they probably already account for like 30-40% of your total revenue.
Yeah.
And start there. That's your first one. And then look at the 10 best-selling categories and improve your titles on category level.
Yeah.
You look at it that way, you know, it's way more important to start than to execute it in a perfect way. You will instantly make more money just on the title.
Yeah.
And you got me on the total rant on title. But I always get excited about titles. It's, you know, and so does every merchant, because it's the number one optimized field.
Yeah. Now,
images is next, because there's a lot of errors and image is a big item and all of that. Another very obvious one people forget to do often is exclude products, you know, from your feed and then do not advertise. So you ask a retailer, hey, you got like 10,000 products. You want to advertise all your products? And then the retailer goes, yeah, of course. Yeah, I want to sell all my 10,000. And then you say, no, you don't. Oh, why wouldn't I? Well, when you think about it, a lot of your products are not profitable or not that profitable.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you focus on profitability? So you see that Delificos customers, they exclude products, first of all, on price. So without having specific data on profitability per product, as a retailer, you know, if I sell products that will cost like less than £10 through Google Shopping, gross margin is going to be like maybe 250, the CPA, probably between 2 and 3. So if I'm on the wrong side of 250, I lose money every time I sell a product, which is the opposite of what I want to achieve, right? So just make a simple rule, exclude if price is smaller than £10. It's as simple as that. So that's the first thing you exclude on. Then obviously title and availability are next. But you know, just like with my example of what are the search terms that customers are looking for, you can also see which products are profitable on which channels, right? Because with Daily Feedports Analytics, we can measure that, we can tell you that. And then you don't have to rely on price. You can simply see, do you have like 10% of your products that are getting a considerable number of clicks?
Yeah.
And you know, they never get sold. So bang, you're wasting your money there. You have products that have a ROAS of 6. You go like, well, I'm still making money. Yeah, sure. But you have lots of products that have a ROAS of more than 8. So why don't you ditch the low ROAS products?
Yeah.
And then the budget that you're wasting on those products will automatically go to the products that are left in your feed, which is a ROAS of 8.
Yeah.
Now we're making money, right? You're selling more because your ROI goes up. Your money is better spent. So think intelligently about what you do not want to advertise.
Yeah.
It's like the second way to make a lot of money. And, you know, at David Birch, 65% of our customers do that. So there's still lots of customers that don't. Guys, you know, there's money on the table. Just grab it.
I think that's the problem with a lot of companies I see is chasing turnover. You know, whereas the reality is, you know, ROAS, you know, is sort of a term that's been used since the dawn of ads, really. But you know, that's just turnover. That's not POAS, is it? You know, profit on
exactly
ad spend. You know, and ultimately at the end of a month or the end of a year, when you do your end of month or end of year accounts, it's great saying we did 12.5 million, but what was the net profit if it was, you know, 50K on a £12 million turnover? You know, that's, you know, less than 0.5% net profit. Yeah. Whereas, you know, and the cost of delivering all that service and goods and packaging and everything, et cetera, you know, is swallowed up any margin that was left or any profit that was left. So I think absolutely, you know, there's products that are just turning money, you know, that are making money. Sometimes you need a bit of that to be able to, you know, cash flow and pay the bills, and you know, in different times of year, you know, you quite often it's a January, we've got a lot of bills to end of January, we've got to pay for all the stock that we bought in November, December on the 30, 60 day, whatever it may be. But ultimately, you know, consistently we want to be making profit. So I think, you know, then I think there should be just more focus on profit and POAS and products, like you say at the end there, you know, the products that are a higher ROAS. Or working margin into the whole calculation, you know, bringing cost of goods through into the feed. So then you're working on margin, you know, as opposed to, right, we did that 100K month, yeah, but we lost money. It's like, well, let's do 70K and make 10 grand, 20 grand, whatever it may be. You know, it's a better conversation, isn't it? Rather than, yeah, we hit all this target, but then in 6-8 months, we're not in business. And then going back to your title thing, yeah, we see that all the time, you know. If you're selling branded product, you need the brand names in the description, in the titles, you know, and quite often you get a fee.
First, non-brand, not at the end.
Yeah. So common, you know, perfect example, you know, Levi 501. Oh, it's a 501. Yeah, it's all right on Levi's website when you're on their website, but when it's in a feed amongst 20 other competitors and it just says 501, oh, is that a Levi? I'm not sure, you know. And then you don't click, you don't get the click. Or if you get the click, you're not sure, you know. So, and obviously you're going to get, the impression, the click through, the conversion, so much higher. So spending, I akin it's like SEO on your feed, you know. Obviously we're an SEO and PPC agency primarily. You know, we spend a lot of time optimizing titles on websites, but we spend a lot of time optimizing titles in the feed. And they are different, you know, they can be very, very similar, sometimes the same. But ultimately, you know, you're taking that feed from a store, which might be not very good, you know, and then you're optimizing it in a tool like DataFeed Watch and others, optimizing, adding that brand in, adding the description in, you know, adding the detail, whether it's a size. It's been a while since I got into size 32 inch jeans, I'll tell you that, but maybe when I was 12. Levi 501 blue, the 20, 38 inch, maybe 36 on a good day, jeans is gonna appear a lot more. You're gonna get the impressions and you're gonna get better conversions. But yeah, some great stuff there. I think it just gets missed, doesn't it? And I think, you know, in the world of AI, if you like, and automations and scripts, and you know, depending on what tools you're using, you know, to run Google ads now, you know, the machines have got so much better. So to get an advantage over your competitors, to spend more time on your feed, is something that literally, you know, I think I generally believe is, you know, is going to give you the edge over the competitors, because, you know, the, you know, PMax, if five people are running PMax campaigns for the same SKUs and they're sort of using the similar automations, where you're going to get a massive, massive advantage is by having a strong feed, because your products are going to show. You
which
know,
in the PMax campaign is one of the very, very few things you even can control.
Yeah.
Google controls the rest. You know?
So, you know, if you're running PMax, which I would say 80-90% of you are, you know, obviously there is other things you can do, and we'll save that for another episode, but feed, you know, and optimizing all the different, you know, whether that's categories, product types, you know, the variables, custom labels, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, making sure it's absolutely very, very thorough is going to give you that advantage over somebody that's just maybe just gone pull, bang, you know, and straight into a PMax campaign.
Yeah, counting on Google to make it perfect, even though Google is going to have to work with your garbage.
Yeah. Yeah, showing your products for the wrong searches, not showing your products when they should, so on and so forth. Yeah.
There's lots of fruits hanging pretty low, but you gotta see it.
Yeah.
And lots of people do not have time to see it or do not know where to look, but it's out there.
Yeah.
It's very easy to control. But for those of you that don't have time, you know, go to Richard and he'll do it for you.
Thank you. So it'd be good for you to talk about a specific campaign, you know, or project, company. If you can mention a company brand, that would be great. So I know it's not always that easy, but tell us about a project that you worked on that's really sort of boosted e-commerce sales and performance.
Well, I mentioned the 250% increase in traffic, just optimizing the title. I'd like to come up with a maybe a bit more original example, which is automated text ad campaigns. GTA service that we also offer. So first of all, if you have a Google Shopping ad on the SERP, the search engine result page, and the Google text ads campaign, the consumer is 90% more likely to go to your product page. Another stat that was like, somebody made it up. No, it's Google who made it up. So, you know, it must be true. Because with two ads dominating the SERP, you know, you're taking space that others cannot. You're in view twice and what have you. But Google Shopping has become so mainstream and so effective and so efficient that lots of retailers were like, oh, you know, let's not do text ads because, you know, after all, it's cumbersome. You need to come up with the keywords and with the ad groups and everything. So let's not do it. So with our GTA Google text ad service, we will create a brand new text ad campaign every single day, several times per day, even based on your data feed. So it's completely automatic. So that saves you time. More importantly, you know, I could talk for hours on this, but the biggest thing that I like is that it creates a unique ad group, a single ad group for every single unique product. And then for this unique ad group, there will be a unique set of keywords and a unique text ad. So the text ads may be the same structure for every one of your product, but it will still contain, you know, the right color, the right size, the right price, and what have you. Also, you will, which is something you cannot do when you manage manually on in Google Ads, you will make sure that out of stock products will not be in that campaign. Now, that alone will save you a ton of money, right? We at some point set up a campaign for, I forgot what the brand name was, you know, it was a South American secondhand car dealer. And you know, the funny thing about the car business is that the number of products in any car industry is humongous because you got all those brands, all those makes, with, you know, all those colors, all those wheel sizes, engine sizes. You know, you will easily scale up to a few million products, even if you're like a mid-sized secondhand car dealer. People search very specifically for what they need. And then with an automatically generated text ad campaign with a unique keyword that contains, the unique ad group that contains unique keywords and a unique text ad, you know, that's how you drive that. So everyone's searching in South America for second-hand car, you know, by brand, make, type, and whatever you would find the right ad. It would be like very long tail, which means there's a very low cost per click. Still, it'd be totally spot on, you know, the match between the search query and the ad being shown. And, you know, actually, you know, truth be told, I forgot what the percentage increase was in traffic and whatever, but you know, it was humongous. They didn't even have a big budget, but this made it so efficient that it became a, you know, very, very profitable business. It didn't even, you know, after setting it up, it didn't take a lot of time to maintain it because it's completely automated. So yeah, you know, thinking outside the box, when we think feeds, we think Google Shopping, Facebook ads, a couple of other ones. But automated text ads is a great add-on to that business. And, you know, cars, books, lots of other products that have a very long tail, especially if it has a very long tail. Yeah. This is a great solution that will drive your ROAS through the roof as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that the people that are with us still on this episode, there'll be 1% running search ads via their feed. You know, when you think about that, listener, you know, it's, you know, you've got 10,000 SKUs to create 10,000 dynamic search ads that are specific to those products with the data that's in your feed that you've optimized. You know, you've improved the titles and so forth, like we talked about a few minutes ago, and you're creating ads that are very specific to that very, very specific one product out of 10,000, but there's 10,000 of these. Very specific ad, very specific keyword, straight to the landing page of the products, but via a search ad, you know, even pulling in price, for example, you know, and if you've got, if you're in a market where price is, you know, very key, which is a lot of, you know, a lot of industries, you can pull price into your ad. Obviously, if your prices are changing daily or weekly, you know, and if you're working with our sponsor at the moment is a company called PriceInc, you know, and they're dynamic pricing based on stock availability and all sorts of different variables. You can pull price then into your search ad, gives you a big leverage. So I think, I would imagine probably 98% of people that are listening aren't doing that. And obviously, if you want some help with that, you know, we can work with you and Jack and the team and get that up and running and as in a test environment and work on that. So data feeds, you know, I think it's such an exciting time for feeds and feed tech. You know, you've been doing this for, you know, like say nearly 13 years, but now the way that the platforms are leveraging a lot more AI, you know, I think feeds are going to be the, you know, going to be the difference between sort of success and failure, or, you know, give you the big advantage in the coming years. But what would you say is sort of next in the next 12 months, you know, for feeds? What are some of the things our listeners need to be looking out for?
I think in general, let's say in the feed marketing business, I see two trends, and it is that there's going to be a deeper integration of advertising channels, marketplaces, all kinds of analytics, performance data on product level and related stuff like, for example, you know, we also run a service called Price Watch, so that you know what the prices are that your competitors are, are having. So if you combine all of that, you get an even better mix, you know, an even bigger ability to optimize your feeds for performance. You know, what if you do not only know the quantity, but also the ROAS of a product, you know, that is per channel? What if you also know the return rate?
Right?
What if you could create custom labels for that, combined with, you know, your knowledge that that this particular product has a price rank less than four, so you're in the top three cheapest competitors for this product. So more and more data will enable you to do a lot more in data feed optimization.
Yeah.
You know, which is related to the other trend that you already mentioned. There's obviously an enormous thing going on right now with AI. You know, it was already there, but it has exploded right now. So obviously everyone, including us, is working with that. It does not fundamentally change everything that I said about how to optimize data feeds and how to get a better return on your advertising campaigns. Yeah. It just makes it even quicker and way and even more effective to use AI to do that. It's going to be an even bigger time saver. Data Feed Watch will, you know, is already using some AI, is working on expanding that, and it will make the retailer's life even easier to make sure that he can optimize without too much effort and drive his ROAS through the roof.
I think the companies that really leverage their feeds. You know, you mentioned some great, you know, returns, profit, ranking, price, you know, all in the feed and combining all that. You know, they're the ones, I think, from 12 months from now, I think you're going to see some clever merchants that are working with clever feed optimization companies that are really just get, you know, over and above everybody else. I think everybody else is just going to be plug and play PMAX, you know, which is okay if you're the only one, but you won't be the only one. You'll be, everybody's doing that, you know, so you're not going to have the advantage. And I think, adding in those extra data layers and those extra variables is, I'm with you on that. I think it's an exciting 12 months ahead. So I like to end every episode with a book recommendation, Jack. What book would you recommend to our listeners?
Well, you know, it's a podcast, so it's probably not camera, but currently I'm reading this. It is the latest book of Simon Sinek, who is the author of Why. Yeah. And this book is called The Infinite Game. And so actually I was on a card.com leadership summit 2 weeks ago in Houston, and somebody from Simon Sinek's organization did a presentation on that. It was a great presentation that I could personally totally relate to. The infinite game means that business is not a zero-sum game. You know, I can make profit while you also make profit. It's like, you know, I can only win if you lose. It's not like that.
Yeah.
So business is not finite in terms of profit. Yeah. It's also not finite in time. You know, if you look back at the, let's say, 10 largest companies globally 20 years ago, and you look at, you know, what's it today, you know, most of them have this. So it's not finite. I can relate to that because I always aspire to build a great product that customers love.
Yeah.
Always wanted to be big, but not per se the biggest, you know, at the expense of others. I always invested in long-term relationship, not short-term products.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff is all in there. You know, you got to have a vision. You got to have a North Star. You got to have teams that work well together, that trust each other.
Yeah.
So
that's brilliant.
It is a great book. It's a management book. It is a philosophy that I personally very much like.
Great. We'll get that linked up. I'll get that in the basket in about 4 minutes time and get that here tomorrow. I think if you can see behind me, you can see his other book that you referred to is right there.
You have quite a statue book behind you. Yeah. I like the cold folding you did, by the way.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, took some sorted out. There's a few out of place there, I can see. That's now going to, I'm going to need to sort that out. But so thanks for coming on the show, Jacques. For those that want to find out more about you, more about DataFeed Watch, what's the best way to do that?
DataFeedWatch.com is the place to go. You can find a blog with, you know, lots of stuff that I talked about. You can also sign up for a free trial, 2 weeks, you know, more if you need it.
Yeah.
And try out, see if it works. The one thing I should mention last is that it is a service that, you know, you get a monthly subscription, you sign up, you create your own feeds. However, you know, 50% of what we do is to provide support. So we have almost 24/7. A live chat available. First response time is like 20-30 seconds. So whatever your question is, whatever your problem is, whatever you need help with, it's one click away. And the combination of having a pretty intuitive piece of software with people that will solve, you know, your every wish, desire, and question, that's a powerful combination. So go try it out, see if it works for you. You know, spoiler alert, it will.
It will. I can vouch for it. We've worked with a lot of Jack's team over the many years we've worked with you guys, and you know, there's a lot of options out there, but we remain a strong advocate of DataFeed Watch and your team. So thank you for all your help over the years, helping us grow our business as well. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on the show, and I think we'll have a look at getting you back on in sort of 12, 18 months and see where the winners are now, you know, or will be in 12 months time, using feeds and adding that extra, you know, information in there. But thanks for coming on the show, and I look forward to speaking to you again.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me, Richard.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Ecom at One e-commerce podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, please hit subscribe and don't forget to sign up to our e-commerce newsletter and leave us a review on iTunes. This podcast has been brought to you by our team here at Ecom One, the e-commerce marketing agency.